Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Okay, so we'll continue on Ajahn Jeff's book on right mindfulness, and go to the actually it's just a continuation, but starting a new chapter. It's called Fleshing Out the Four Tetrads, so Anapanasati, and then filling out the tetrads which cover the four foundations of mindfulness, but then how they're applied with mindfulness of breathing. And we'll begin with, although saying fleshing out the four tetrads, it'll be a few days before we get there. So. there's some more general aspects of the mindfulness practice and application of it. And I actually, as I was researching and looking for different suttas to sort of fill out the Ajahn Jeff's or reading full suttas that he just sort of tangentially mentions, I came across a sutta that is just interesting to begin the day with. Sort of came across it serendipitously, and it's on the general theme of mindfulness. So beginning, that's it. It's Anguttara 8, Sutta 81. And it's titled Mindfulness. Surprise, surprise. Okay, bhikkhus. One, when there is no mindfulness and clear comprehension, for one deficient in mindfulness and clear comprehension, two, the sense of moral shame and moral dread lack their... The sense of moral shame and moral dread lack their proximate cause. So they hiri anotapa. What's that, Jen Jeff's translation again? Compunction and compunction. Conscience and concern. Yeah. He has changed the compunction though. Yeah. But anyway, that's compunction and concern. Anyway, those are. Get a feel for that. So when there is no mindfulness and clear comprehension, for one deficient in mindfulness and clear comprehension, the sense of moral shame and moral dread lack their proximate cause. When there is no sense of moral shame and moral dread, hiri and otapa, for one deficient in a sense of moral shame and moral dread, the restraint of the sense faculties lacks its proximate cause. When there is no restraint of the sense faculties, for one deficient in restraint of the sense faculties, virtuous behavior lacks its proximate cause. When there is no virtuous behavior, for one deficient in virtuous behavior, right concentration lacks its proximate cause. When there is no right concentration, for one deficient in right concentration, the knowledge and vision of things as they really are lacks its proximate cause. When there is no knowledge and vision of things as they really are, for one deficient in the knowledge and vision of things as they really are, disenchantment and dispassion lack their proximate cause. When there is no disenchantment and dispassion, for one deficient in disenchantment and dispassion, the knowledge and vision of liberation lacks its proximate cause. Suppose there is a tree deficient in branches and foliage. Then its shoots do not grow to fullness, Also, its bark, softwood, and heartwood do not grow to fullness. So too, when there is no mindfulness and clear comprehension, for one deficient in mindfulness and clear comprehension, the sense of moral shame and moral dread lack their proximate cause. Again, it goes through that whole series of causes and conditions, ending up the knowledge and vision of liberation lacks its proximate cause. Then he goes, because when there is mindfulness and clear comprehension, for one possessing mindfulness and clear comprehension, the sense of moral shame and moral dread possess their proximate cause. When there is a sense of moral shame and moral dread, for one possessing a sense of moral shame and moral dread, or compunction and concern, hiri and otapa, restraint of the sense faculties possesses its proximate cause. When there is restraint of the sense faculties, for one who exercises restraint over the sense faculties, virtuous behavior possesses its proximate cause. When there is virtuous behavior, for one whose behavior is virtuous, right concentration possesses its proximate cause. When there is right concentration, for one possessing right concentration, the knowledge and vision of things as they really are possesses its proximate cause. When there is knowledge and vision of things as they really are, for one possessing the knowledge and vision of things as they really are, disenchantment and dispassion possess their proximate cause. When there is disenchantment and dispassion, for one possessing disenchantment and dispassion, the knowledge and vision of liberation possesses its proximate cause. Suppose there is a tree possessing branches and foliage, then its shoots grow to fullness. Also its bark, softwood, and heartwood grow to fullness. So too, when there is mindfulness and clear comprehension, for one possessing mindfulness and clear comprehension, the sense of more, and then that whole series of causes and arise, and to the knowledge and vision of liberation possesses its proximate cause. So it's a seeing that, this, and putting that in the context of causes and conditions, and what we're doing is laying that foundation to make sure the appropriate causes are coming forth. Okay, I'll begin the chapter. Although the four tetrads constitute the Buddha's most extensive instructions on what to do when you sit down to meditate, they are still very terse. As one writer has commented, they are more like a telegram than a full text. This should come as no surprise, for these instructions were never meant to stand on their own. They were embedded in a canon of texts memorized by a community of practitioners who would use them simply as memory aids, both for teachers and for students. This means that they had to be long enough to convey the most important points, such as the fact that breath meditation is a proactive process designed to give insight into the processes of fabrication, but short enough to be easily memorized. They also had to indicate through inclusion which aspects of the practice held true across the board, and through silence and exclusion, which aspects allowed for variations from case to case. If everything were mentioned, the sheer volume of instructions would have been unwieldy, making it difficult to sort out which instructions were meant for everyone and which for specific cases. So the terseness of the instructions, instead of being a shortcoming, is actually one of their strengths. As we have seen from the preceding chapters, a great deal of practical nuts and bolts advice can be unpacked from the tetrads when you look at them carefully, but even when unpacked, they still leave many gaps. To get the most out of these memory aids, you have to fill these gaps in. There are two places to look for information that will help you do this, within the canon and outside it. Within the canon, you can find this sort of information in three ways. The first is to look at how the tetrads provide perspective on one another. As we noted in the preceding chapter, they deal with four aspects of a single process, using the breath as a focal point for remaining focused on the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, while subduing greed and distress with reference to the world. But the connection among the tetrads goes deeper than that. This is because of the role of perceptions and feelings as mental fabrications. On the one hand, the bodily fabrication provided by the breath is sure to produce feelings. The feelings then can be used to manipulate states of mind. Similarly, perceptions are needed to stay focused on the breath, some dealing directly with the breath, others focused more on inducing the mental quality of dispassion for any distractions that would pull you away from the breath. These too will have an impact on states of mind and on the function the Anapanasati Sutta assigns to the fourth tetrad. So the fourth tetrad would include impermanence, dispassion, cessation, relinquishment. This means that when you encounter a problem in putting any of the tetrads into practice, you can often find a solution by looking at related steps in another tetrad. We have already given some indication in the preceding chapter of how this can be done, and we will draw additional connections among the tetrads below. The second way to flesh out the tetrads with material from within the canon is to draw from other discourses in the canon that provide insight in how to use the four frames of reference when developing breath meditation as a basis for tranquility and insight, both as means to concentration and as activities for using concentration to develop discernment. The third way is to look to other passages in the canon for alternative themes of meditation that will help in dealing with issues in these four frames of reference. In other words, when you can't get the mind to accomplish any of the trainings contained in the 16 steps by working within these frameworks, you look for help from other subsidiary themes of meditation. The Buddha's general instructions on how and when to do this come in Samyutta 47, Sutta number 10. Because there is some controversy over how to understand this discourse, it's worth looking at it in detail. And this is an excerpt from Samyutta 47, Sutta number 10. Ananda, if a monk or nun remains with mind well established in the four establishings of mindfulness, he or she may be expected to perceive grand successive distinctions. There is the case of a monk who remains focused on the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, subduing greed and distress with reference to the world. As he remains thus focused on the body in and of itself, a fever based on the body arises within his body. Or there is sluggishness in his awareness, or his mind becomes scattered externally. He should then direct his mind to any inspiring theme. As his mind is directed to any inspiring theme, delight arises within him. In one who feels delight, rapture arises. In one whose mind is enraptured, the body grows calm. His body calm, he feels pleasure. As he feels pleasure, his mind grows concentrated. He reflects, I have attained the aim to which my mind was directed. Let me withdraw my mind from the inspiring theme. He withdraws and engages neither in directed thought nor in evaluation. He discerns, I am not thinking or evaluating. I am inwardly mindful and at ease. And further, he remains focused on feelings, mind, mental qualities, in and of themselves, ardent, alert, and mindful, subduing greed and distress with reference to the world. As he remains thus focused on mental qualities in and of themselves, a fever based on mental qualities arises within his body, or there is sluggishness in his awareness, or his mind becomes scattered externally. He should then direct his mind to any inspiring theme. As if mind is directed to any inspiring theme, delight arises within him. In one who feels delight, rapture arises. In one whose mind is enraptured, the body grows calm. His body calm, he is sensitive to pleasure. As he feels pleasure, his mind grows concentrated. He reflects, I have attained the aim to which my mind was directed. Let me withdraw. He withdraws and engages neither in directed thought nor in evaluation. He discerns, I am not thinking or evaluating. I am inwardly mindful and at ease. This ananda is development based on directing. And what is development based on not directing? A monk, when not directing his mind to external things, discerns, my mind is not directed to external things. It is unconstricted, front and back, released and undirected. And then I remain focused on the body in and of itself. I am ardent, alert, mindful, and at ease. When not directing his mind to external things, he discerns, my mind is not directed to external things. It is unconstricted front and back, released and undirected. And then I remain focused. I remain focused on feelings, on mind, on mental qualities in and of themselves. I am ardent, alert, mindful, and at ease. This ananda is development based on not directing. Now, ananda, I have taught you development based on directing and development based on not directing. What a teacher should do out of compassion for his disciples, seeking their welfare, that I have done for you. Over there are places to sit at the roots of trees. Over there are empty dwellings. Practice jhana, ananda. Do not be heedless. Do not be remorseful in the future. That is our instruction to you all. I forgot to look up what that... whether he says practice jhana, because the verb jayati is...
Yes. Huh? Yes,
yeah, not phrased. Yeah. So it's a verb for it's a difference between using a noun and a verb, which we brought which Ajahn Kurunamo brought up the other night.
But I think is it often translated differently in Ajahn Jeff because of his
Well, that's easy to
like practice meditation.
Yes, exactly.
That phrase right there on that. Yes. Just don't just like meditate.
Yeah. Yeah. Meditate ananda. Meditate ananda. Not be negligent, lest you regret it later. It's Bhikkhu Bodhis. Because that is the it's a synonym for directing the mind, settling it, making it stable and still. Okay.
What page is that stuff?
Pardon?
What page is that? I mean, what? Either the parents or reference or page.
The reference?
Yeah.
Sutta 47, Sutta number 10. It's like 1638. it's a longer sutta. So that's and it's worth probably going to the full sutta. It's always helpful. That's where it's really helpful to be. 1638. Page 1638. Seeing sometimes those differences in translation and just how they get fleshed out gives different feelings for things. Okay. The main controversy over this passage concerns how to understand the distinction between directing and not directing the mind. One interpretation argues that directing the mind refers to jhana practice, and not directing the mind to mindfulness practice, the former inducing a narrow range of awareness, the latter a broader one. If you came to this passage with the idea that jhana and the establishing of mindfulness are two radically different practices, you could find a few passages in this discourse that would seem to support that interpretation. The passage on directing the mind contains references to rapture, pleasure, concentration, directed thought, and evaluation, all of which are normally associated with jhana, whereas the passage on not directing the mind describes the mind as being unconstricted and released when developing any of the establishings of mindfulness. However, unconstricted doesn't mean a broad range of awareness. According to Samyutta 51, Sutta number 20, and I'll read that sutta. According to that sutta, constricted simply means slothful or drowsy. So unconstricted means free of sloth and drowsiness. And when you remember that the Buddha did not draw a radical distinction between mindfulness and jhana, as we have noted, the four establishings are the themes of jhana, and are themselves counted as a type of concentration. So then, I think this is a really important point. And, you know, there tends to be the kind of camps that stake their claim on mindfulness as one thing and jhana, but it's a whole spectrum of application of mind, and the four foundations of mindfulness are the basis of this developing of awareness and attentiveness, and it helps the mind to settle. Go to that. Ooh, wow, okay, this is long. Oh. So this sutta that he refers to in terms of how the word, which is translated constricted and unconstricted, these there's a sutta, okay, it's in Samyutta 51, which is the Iddipada Samyutta, basis of spiritual power, and Sutta number 20. Because these four, and these Iddipadas are especially in the Thai forest tradition, Ajahn Mun in particular, would put a lot of emphasis on this cultivation and attention to the Iddipadas as a basis for the for meditation, concentration, samadhi practice. Because these four bases for spiritual power, when developed and cultivated, are of great fruit and benefit. And how, bhikkhus, are the four bases for spiritual power developed and cultivated so that they are of great fruit and benefit? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to desire and volitional formations of striving, thinking. Thus my desire will be neither too slack nor too tense, and it will be neither constricted internally nor distracted externally. And he dwells perceiving after and before. As before, so after, as after, so before, as below, so above, so below, as by day, so at night, so by day. Thus, with a mind that is open and unenveloped, he develops the mind imbued with luminosity. He develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to energy. Possesses concentration due to investigation. And going through that this aspect. Thus, sort of due to desire and volitional formation starts in thinking, thus my desire will be neither too slack nor too tense. It will be neither constricted internally nor distracted externally. And he dwells perceiving after and before, as before, so after, so before, as below, so above, so below, as by day, so at night, as at night, so by day. Thus, with a mind that is open and unenveloped, he develops the mind imbued with luminosity. And what, bhikkhus, is desire that is too slack? It is desire that is accompanied by lassitude, associated with lassitude. This is called desire that is too slack. And what, bhikkhus, is desire that is too tense? It is desire that is accompanied by restlessness, associated with restlessness. This is called desire that is too tense. And what, bhikkhus, is desire that is constricted internally? It is desire that is accompanied by sloth and torpor, associated with sloth and torpor. This is called desire that is constricted internally. And what, bhikkhus, is desire that is disturbed externally? It is desire that is repeatedly distracted externally, repeatedly disturbed on account of the five cords of sensual pleasure, sight, sound, smells, taste, touch. This is called desire that is distracted externally. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu dwell perceiving after and before? As before, so after, as after, so before. Here, bhikkhus, the perception of after and before is well grasped by a bhikkhu, well attended to, well considered, well penetrated by wisdom. It is in this way that a bhikkhu dwells perceiving after and before. As before, so after, as after, so before. See what the commentary says to that. Yeah, I did read this before. I remember. It wasn't helpful. That happens sometimes. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu dwell as below, so above, as above, so below? Here, bhikkhus, the bhikkhu reviews this very body upwards from the soles of the feet downwards, from the tips of the hairs enclosed in skin, as full of many kinds of impurities. There are in this body head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, pleura, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, excrement, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, saliva, snot, blood, fluid of the joints, urine. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu dwells as below, so above, so below. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu dwell as by day, so at night, so by day? Here, bhikkhus, at night, a bhikkhu develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to desire and volitional formations of striving by way of the same qualities, the same features, the same aspects as he develops that basis for spiritual power by day. Or else by day, he develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to desire and volitional formations of striving by way of the same qualities, the same features, the same aspects, as he develops that basis for spiritual power at night. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu dwells as by day, so at night, as at night, so by day. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu with a mind that is open and unenveloped develop the mind imbued with luminosity? Here, bhikkhus, the perception of light is well grasped by a bhikkhu. The perception of day is well resolved upon. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu with a mind that is open and unenveloped develops the mind imbued with luminosity. And what, bhikkhus, is energy that is too slack? It is energy that is accompanied by lassitude, associated with lassitude. This is called energy that is too slack. And what, bhikkhus, is energy that is too tense? It is energy that is accompanied by restlessness, associated with restlessness. That is called energy that is too tense. And what bhikkhus is energy that is constricted internally? It is energy that is accompanied by sloth and torpor, associated with sloth and torpor. This is called energy that is constricted internally. And what bhikkhus is energy that is distracted externally? It is energy that is repeatedly distracted externally, repeatedly disturbed on account of the five cords of sensual pleasure. This is called energy that is distracted externally. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu with a mind that is open and unenveloped develops the mind imbued with luminosity. And then it goes exactly the same with the aspect of the third aspect of the Iddhipada, of mind as a basis, and the same with the vimamsa, investigation. And then so it goes through exactly the same. And what bhikkhus is investigation is too slack. It is investigation that is accompanied by lassitude, associated with lassitude. This is called investigation that is too slack. And what bhikkhus is investigation that is too tense. It is investigation that is accompanied by restlessness, associated with restlessness. This is called investigation that is too tense. And what bhikkhus is investigation that is constricted internally? It is investigation that is accompanied by sloth and torpor, associated with sloth and torpor. This is called investigation that is constricted internally. And what bhikkhus is investigation that is distracted externally? It is investigation that is repeatedly distracted externally, repeatedly disturbed on account of the five cords of sensual pleasure. This is called investigation that is distracted externally. And then it goes through the development of these qualities. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu with a mind that is open and unenveloped develops the mind imbued with luminosity. When bhikkhus, the four bases for spiritual power, have been developed and cultivated in this way, they are of great fruit and benefit. When bhikkhus, the four bases for spiritual power, have been developed and cultivated in this way, a bhikkhu wields the various kinds of spiritual power. And goes through the different iddhis, actually. Different kinds of psychic phenomena. When bhikkhus, the four bases for spiritual power, have been developed and cultivated in this way, a bhikkhu, by the destruction of the taints in this very life, enters and dwells in the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, realizing it for himself with direct knowledge. So that's the... I hope that's, how do you say, a helpful guide to the whatever meditation we're developing. I mean, we're talking about mindfulness of the breath, but then it's also, as the Buddha points to in this that previous one, when it's not working, okay, find something that's uplifting for the mind, so something that inspires the mind and creates some kind of delight that's associated with Dhamma, and then attending to, as one's, whether one's developing the breath meditation, developing any some other theme, you know, what's the quality of the mind? Is it too loose? Is it too tight? Is it too caught up internally? Is it too scattered externally? Is paying attention to those qualities and creating this balance, finding the ways to find an anchor. Luminosity, that's it's a good word. Think of what's the state of my mind? So the answer that usually pops in as you're meditating usually isn't luminous. Oh, it's luminous. Yeah, right. this is what the Buddha was talking about. But yeah, to really remind oneself that, well, this is where that's the direction we need to be trying to encourage ourselves. Yeah.
Do you have a synonym for lassitudes?
Pardon?
Lassitudes.
Yeah, has it?
A synonym? Like another word?
Lassitude. Well, slack. Mm-hmm. You know, a slacker meditator. Yes, lassitude, yeah, slack, loose, loosey-goosey, lazy. Actually, the word torpor is really good, torporous, kind of stiff.
Lackluster.
Huh? Lackluster, yeah, lackluster, there's a really good one, yeah.
So, I think we left Ajahn Jeff. He was going to tell us a little about what non-directed.
Oh, he'll get to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, we're not done yet.
Aside from that.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It'll.
We're left hanging.
We're left. Yes. I'll get back to it. Because also there's there's a couple suttas that are referenced that he just sort of throws in brackets, and I think they're worth reading, so you know we'll plod through this because I think it's worth just fleshing this out more. To be continued. Okay.